So this week's shiur from Maseches Tainus is dedicated by Gary and Toby Greenstein in memory of their dear son Yomi Yosef Menachem Zichrono Livracha Ben Gershon, who grew up here in our shul. And this shiur is Le'ilui Nishmas. So the weekly breakfast is Le'ilui Nishmas Yosef Yitzchak Ben Yehuda Leib Zatzal and Refuah Shleima for Shalom Tzvi Elimelech Ben Malka. Okay, welcome. We are in Maseches Tainus, Daf Yud Amud Aleph. Daf Yud Amud Aleph. So the Gemara is involved in a discussion that still relates to a machlokas we saw on Daf Tes Amud Beis. The machlokas on Daf Tes Amud Beis was between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yoshua. What was that machlokas? Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. The machlokas was, how exactly does rain come and saturate the world? Does rain saturate the world because it emanates from the oceans? That's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, that water essentially evaporates from the oceans into the cloud system and then is purified and sweetened, I think the Lashon of the Gemara is, and so that it's no longer salty, and then comes back down to the world through the process of rain. Or Rabbi Yoshua's opinion is that there is some sort of, it has nothing to do with the oceans. The oceans are the oceans. And of course, there are better oceans and worse oceans. But the actual rain comes from some sort of reservoir of water in the heavens that contains this already sweetened water and just comes down and irrigates the earth. That's Machlok Stin Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yoshua. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, we learned Eretz Yisrael nivras techila, v'chol ha'olam kulo nivra lebasof. That creation actually began from Eretz Yisrael. When God created the world, first he created Israel, and then he created the rest of the world. We quoted this Gemara in the context of our shir about whether or not one is permitted to ascend Har Abayis. And one of the things we were discussing, if you recall, is one of the shitos with regards to the international dateline. There's a whole discussion. What is halacha's recognition of the international dateline? There has to be a line in the world where essentially you move from today to tomorrow because the world's divided into 24 different parts on its rotation, and that line was drawn by international consensus, and that international consensus was based on picking an area of the world where they could draw the line latitudinally and it would not cross over too many things. You didn't want to have towns and cities where for some people it's today and for some people it's tomorrow. So, but that line was drawn fairly arbitrarily. So the question is, how does halacha relate to that line? That became a very halacha l'maisa question when the Mir Yeshiva found itself in Shanghai, and that is an area under dispute of exactly where the international dateline is from a halakhic perspective. And we have the correspondence between the Talmidim of the Mir and the Chazon Ish to discuss this whole halachic issue. So one opinion, I believe it's the opinion of Tukachinsky, is that the halachic international dateline actually runs through Yerushalayim. And the reason is this Gemara. The reason is because if the world was first created from Eretz Yisrael, that means time began in Eretz Yisrael. So if we're going to pick a spot in the world that should be the one that we should begin the rotation, so to speak, so that should be Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael nivras tchila v'chol olam kulo nivra lebasof. Shenemar, how do you know that? Ad lo asa eretz v'chutzos. Because when describing creation, the pasuk says that Hashem did not yet create, or until he created, eretz, which is one land, v'chutzos, and those lands outside of it, distinguishing between Eretz Yisrael and outside Eretz Yisrael. Mashke osa HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'at. Eretz Yisrael, mashke osa HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'atzmo. V'chol ha'olam kulo al yedei shliach. Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, creates rain on his own. It's by the direct power and hashkacha and influence of God. V'chol ha'olam kulo and the rest of the world, al yedei shliach. God does that through a messenger, through some sort of malach. Shenemar. How do you know that? Because it says, Hanosein matar al penei ha'aretz. Hanosein, the one who gives rain on the land, vishaleach mayim al pnei chutzos, and vishaleach, he sends through a shliach water and through al pnei chutzos on the areas outside. So the area of Eretz Yisrael should get rain directly from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, outside of Eretz Yisrael, not through a shliach. Eretz Yisrael shows him a geshamim. Eretz Yisrael actually drinks directly from rain. B'chol alam kulo mit amtsis, and the rest of the world gets the leftovers from whatever Eretz Yisrael doesn't need. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, kano sein matar al pnei aretz. Matar, which is, as we've been learning, matar is a more impactful form of rain. That comes on pnei haaretz, and then the rest of the pasuk that we saw before, v'shaleach mayim, and that's only mayim, only a little water, al pnei chutzos, that's like the runoff. Mashal, it's a parable, adam, to a man, shemegabel es agvina, who's dealing with making cheese, no tel es ha'ochel, and in the process of making cheese, he takes the best of the mixture, umeiniach es apsolas, and the whey, which is also relevant for the making of other dairy products, but not what he's looking for, that he leaves on its own. The Rishonim discuss, and the Achronim discuss, we learned in the Gemara, if you remember at the beginning of the Masechta, that rain is one of the three things, or rain is one of the things that a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do al yidei shliach. Kadosh Baruch Hu does on his own. He doesn't hand the maftechos over to anybody else. So some of us are of the opinion that, of course, when the Gemara said that, it only meant rain in Eretz Yisrael. Rain in Eretz Yisrael, Hashem doesn't give over to anybody else. Rain in Chutz Laretz, that could be the job of a trusty malach. And other opinions say that no, what it means is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sort of gathers the rains in the clouds. That Hashem does on his own. And then the rains divide into two areas. The rain in Eretz Yisrael, Hashem does directly from the original reservoir of Shamayim. But the rain in Chutz La'aretz, that can already come stage two through the Malach. What does all this mean? All this means that we have to recognize that there is an additional dimension of Hashkacha when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's interface with Eretz Yisrael than there is with a God's interface with the rest of the world. Doesn't mean that God doesn't control and guide the rest of the world, but he does so in a more distant manner, in a more removed manner. The presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Eretz Yisrael is so overt, is so palpable, is so connected that the Hashkacha is one that is more direct. It is one that is more engaged. And therefore, even the tefillos for rain in Eretz Yisrael are different because the appeal is, so to speak, directly to the source. In the Chutz La'aretz, we're looking to access the system of rain. Kadosh Baruch Hu should decide to give us rain through whatever systems and considerations and celestial beings are necessary in order for that to ultimately happen. But the sense of Hashkacha is much more acute in the land of Israel. Amar Mar, so we already said, Mamtikin Hein Be'avim, that the water, right? We said that according to Rabbi Eliezer, that the water gathers from the oceans and is sweetened, because the water in the ocean is salty, it's sweetened in the clouds. Minole, so how do you know that? That's quite a profound assertion. To Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, says Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef, name Rabbi Yochanan, Ksiv, it says, Chashchas Mayim Avei Shechokim. That Chashchas Mayim, the darkness of the water, is Avei Shechokim, or thick like clouds. Ksiv, and then there's another pasuk, a very similar phrase, Chashras Mayim, that the sieve of water, Avei Shechokim, is thick like clouds. And that sprinkles the rain. So the Gemara says we could make a little drasha here. Shakol chaf v'shadi aresh. Take the chaf. The only difference between this word chashchas and this word chashras is the chaf and the resh. So take the chaf, combine it with the resh, and we get a new word. And that word is v'kari bei chachshoras. Chachshoras means preparation. So what does it mean? The preparation of water occurs in the thickness of the clouds, indicating that something happens in the clouds to transform the water. What happens? It takes the salty water of the oceans, and it sweetens the water up and sends it down to the earth. Rabbi Yoshua, so what about Rabbi Yoshua? He says that that's not the system at all. He says the water comes straight from heaven. So what does he do with this drasha? So he says, "Bahani koroi my dorish behu." What does he do with these drushos? Saver loy old ki ha dechi asi Rav Dimi. It's similar to Rav Dimi said, "Amar Amri b'Marava," that they would say in Marava, Nahar anani ze'irin mohi. That if the clouds are light, then you could assume that the rain will be light. But chashoch anani, if the clouds are dark, sagyon mohi, then the rain will be more heavy. Keman azla hoditanya. Who is the following brisa following? What does that brisa say? Mayim el ha'elyonim, the upper waters, b'mamar heim tuluyim. They are suspended. What holds that reservoir of water up there? A ma'amar, a saying of God, meaning literally the will of God is expressed through his words. Uperosehen, and Rashi explains, the metaphor of perosehen means their fruits, which means the actual reservoir does not deplete at all. The rain that we experience is simply the offspring, so to speak, of that water, of that heavenly water. Megashamim, that's the Megashamim. Shenemar, as it says, Mipri ma'asecha, from the fruits of your creation, Tisba ha'aretz, you satisfy the earth. Keman, who does that follow? Rabbi Yoshua. So that certainly sounds like Rabbi Yoshua, that there's some sort of great reservoir up there in the sky that is producing the rain that we experience. Rabbi Eliezer, what is Rabbi Eliezer? How does he relate to this? He says, no, Rabbi Eliezer says, this has nothing to do with the systems of rain, but rather the pasuk, or this mimer, is just describing to you the creation of the water altogether. And therefore, the system still works with the oceans, but this is just telling you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this entire system of water. Dichsiv, as it says, who dichsiv? That's what the pasuk is describing. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, kolam kulo mitamsis gan eden hu. The entire world is the leftovers of the rain that is given to Gan Eden. Hushosa, that's what we drink. Shenemar, as it says, v'nahar yotze me'eden, that there is a river that flows out from Eden and irrigates the world. Tano, we learned, mitamsis beis kur, shosa tirkav, from the leftover of the amount of water that it takes to irrigate a field that is the size of a kur. A kur is 30 sa'a. From the amount of leftover, you can irrigate 3 kav. 3 kav is a half of a sa'a. If a kur is 30 sa'a, that means 3 kav is a 60th of a kur. So when you have a container that has enough water to irrigate a kur, the leftovers of what you would need can irrigate a 60th of that kur. What is that? How is that relevant? That's relevant to the next Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, the Rabbanan learn. Eretz Mitzrayim, the land of Mitzrayim, have ya dalid amos parsa al dalid amos parsa. 400 parsels by 400 parsels. Vu echon mishishim bekush, it's a 60th of the land of Kush. The Kush, echon mishishim ba'olam. And Kush is a 60th of the rest of the world. The olam and the world, echon mishishim began, is a 60th of the size of the original Gan. The Gan and the original Gan, it's not Gan Eden, it's Gan Be'eden, right? The original Gan, that original garden, Echad Mishishim Le'eden, is a 60th the size of Eden. It's interesting, and I think in our imagery, we sort of picture the Garden of Eden as this very small space, right? Like some hidden, utopia, right? I don't know about my backyard, but I can't imagine any Passaic backyard, but maybe there is one. But we picture it as sort of this small space. So it's interesting. This Gemara depicts Gan Eden as being many, many times larger than the world. Our world is like an offshoot of that Gan. The Eden and Eden, where the Gan is, Echad Mishishim L'Gehenim. That's very big, but you should know that as big as that is, it's not anywhere as big as Gehenim. Gehenim is 60 times that size. Nimsa Kol Olam Kulo Kekisui Kedera L'Gehenim. So it would appear that the entire world is so small relative to Gehenim, it's like a pot cover of hell. Maybe that also describes certain areas of the world. V'yesh Omrim says, and some say, Gehenim ain la shir, that Gehenim has no shir, it's so big. V'yesh Omrim, Eden ain la shir. Some say, Eden has no shir, it's so big. Omar Rabbi Oshia, says Rabbi Oshia, Ma'idichsiv shochenes amayim rabim rabas otsoros. that he sits on lots of water, and there are many otsros, there are many storehouses. Mi garam lebavel, who causes that bavel shiyu otsroseh meleos bar, that bavel was a very rich place in terms of the fact that its harvest was very good. It had a lot of grain. Havi omer mivnei shochenes al mayim rabim, since bavel is a place that has a lot of water, there's a lot of saturation, it's a lower area, therefore amayim rabim, therefore it didn't really need rain. It didn't need rain the same way because it had the presence of water to irrigate the fields. Amarav asira bavel dechatzda below mitra, that Amarabaya naktinan tuvani velo yuvshani, that Bavel is an area that is swampy and it has a lot of, first of all, chatzda below nitra, it grows things without rain, and it also, tovani, it's like swampy below yuvshani, it doesn't dry up. Bavel is a place that, that could produce food. So maybe now we understand a little better when we were discussing yesterday the tkufa of Ezra and Nehemiah and how few people were willing to return from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a place whose climate is so precarious. It's a place, it's a dry climate, and it's really completely dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you've kind of gotten used to an area where, of course, Bavel is also dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but its natural resources are such that you don't really have to worry the same way, because they're present, they're there, and it's not as vulnerable to the weather patterns in the same degree. So how do you leave a lifestyle that's so predictable and so safe and so calm and so reliable for an area that you have no idea what's going to be, right? And that's to a large degree. How do you leave the comfort of a society where you understand the economic system, or maybe you have a job, or maybe you have something that you can rely on, and go to a place that you don't even know what's going to be. But that's the area of Bavel. Okay, now the Gemara returns in the Mishnah on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. So now we return to the discussion of Shaul and Esa Geshamim. So remember, we had transitioned from mentioning Geshamim, like mentioning Mashiv Aruach Morid Hagashem, to the experience of Shaul and Esa Geshamim, to asking for rain. So says the Mishnah the following. And asking for rain refers to inserting the same talumatar livracha in the bracha of Birchas Hashanah. Begimel b'mar cheshvan, on the third day of cheshvan, sho'alinis ha-geshamim, we ask for geshamim. Now just to recap, when are we mentioning Gevuros geshamim? We concluded Shmini Atzeres, right? The last day of Sukkot. But there is a delay to when we actually ask for rain, right? So the Tanakhama says that delay is till the third day of cheshvan. Rabbi Gamliel says, B'shiva bo, on the seventh day of Cheshvan, Tesvav yom achar achag, and that is 15 days after the after Sukkot, right? The seventh day of Cheshvan. Says the Mishnah, why do we wait 15 days after Sukkot? Well, we're already mentioning rain. It's already the rainy season. We need the rain. Kedei sheyagia achron shebi Yisrael nehar peras, in order to provide opportunity for those Jews who are in the communities furthest from the border to be able to reach home after Aliyah L'Regel. We don't want to ask for rain during the time that they're going to return from Aliyah L'Regel. That's going to cause a lot of problems for people, and it will undermine their motivation to come to Eretz Yisrael, to come to Yerushalayim. And so therefore, we wait until then. We wait until the seventh day. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, says the Gemara, Halacha k'Rabban Gamliel. We paskin like Rabban Gamliel. So first of all, this is a tremendous discussion. We paskin like Rabban Gamliel, that we delay reciting the same Talu Matar until the seventh day of Mar Cheshvan. So what's the question that all the Rishonim raise? The question is, what about Bizman Hazeh? What about La'achar Churban Abayis? When would we start reciting the same Talmud Matar after Churban Abayis? And the Ran asked this question. After all, you're leaving the 15 days so that people can return back to their community. It's no longer relevant once there's no more Aliyah L'Regel. So, and there seem to be different indications in the Rambam of how to exactly address this. But the halacha is, the Rambam paskins, that in fact we do wait until the seventh day of Cheshvan, Bizman Azeh. Shulchan Aruch writes this as well. And we do so even though there's no more Aliyah L'Regel. Ask the Ran, so like, why would we do that? What's the reason for that? So it's very interesting. A lot of the Rishonim mention that there were minhagim to go back to Yerushalayim for the Regel even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We know that historically to be true. That even though we did not have, certainly not a national sovereignty, and even for many hundreds of years, a major presence in the land of Israel, our actual connection to the land, a Jewish presence, always existed in Eretz Yisrael. And the Jews who could get there would always go to Yerushalayim, to Har HaBayis, as part of Aliyah L'Regel. And in deference to them, we don't change the date back to Shmini Atzeres. So you would think it should just be most, which some Rishonim felt that we should. Some Rishonim felt that we should change it to Motzei Sukkos. We should start saying the same Talamata Livracha. There's no more Aliyah L'Regel. So that itself is fascinating, just in the halachic system, because how many people could this have been? This certainly wasn't the majority of people. It certainly, there were many centuries where this wasn't a substantial number of people. So you see that there is a certain, and we see this in other areas of halacha, the notion of retaining our connection to Yerushalayim, to Eretz Yisrael, not just as a nice ideological and Jewish pride sort of thing and a nationalistic ambition, but embedded within the halachic system, we find in a number of different places. And the respect or the deference that we have to people who preserved that reality is something that that endures. And so therefore, the halacha is that we continue to wait until Zion Cheshvan, even today, even in Eretz Yisrael. And there's a lot of discussion about that we should retain that connection to Yerushalayim. There's a famous Chassam Sofer who says that after the earthquake in Tzfat that killed many people, he said that one of the things, let's formulate it in light of yesterday's shir, one of the things that we should think about working on as a result of that earthquake is the fact that the Jewish community set up such a substantial Torah center in the northern part of Israel and not in Yerushalayim itself. And there are historical reasons for why that happened, but that earthquake was like a wake-up call to that reality. So today we still keep it. So what's interesting is, what'll be interesting to see, that became part of the halachic system, and it's certainly not going to get changed. But what will be interesting to see when Mashiach comes is another factor that's obviously not addressed by the Rishonim, which is that today, even if there was a mitzvah Aliyah L'Regel, it would not take 15 days to get anywhere. You know, in 10 hours, we can get from Newark to Yerushalayim. So maybe some people who've been through the traffic of Highway 1 will say that it takes 15 days, but not anymore. They did all the construction. I don't know if you've seen, they dug through mountains, they removed mountains, they went around mountains. I mean, it's unbelievable. They built a whole new road. So, you know, you can get to the end of Israel and, you know, it's like 8 exits on the parkway. It's not, you know, you're not talking about a major trip. So what's that going to do to the same Talamot Livrach? I can't imagine that Los and Labo will be waiting necessarily. So other posts can bring in other reasons, other gemaras of why maybe we waited till the fifth, till the seventh of Cheshvan, having to do with the fruit still being in the field and not wanting it to be spoiled. But it's a discussion. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Chananya Omer. Chananya said, Uva Gola. And in the diaspora, which here refers to Bavel, Ad Shishim B'Tkufa. We wait until the 60th day of the Tkufa. What is the Tkufa? The Tkufa is the equinox. So, just to give us the basic background, the Earth goes around the sun, right? How long does it take the Earth to go around the sun? 365 days, right?
Quarter.
Wrong, exactly. David Baumzer, give him credit. It takes 365 days and 6 hours to go around the sun. There are two points in that orbit because the Earth is also tilted on an axis. The Earth is not perpendicular to the sun. But even though it's tilted, if you sort of imagine if this is the sun and this is the Earth, there are two times where the sun hits the equator exactly at a 90-degree angle. And when that happens, the amount, the length of the day and the length of the night are equal. And that's the turning point when the days will begin to get shorter or longer, depending on where you are on the earth. If you're in the southern hemisphere, it happens in one direction. If you're in the northern hemisphere, it happens in another direction. We relate to this as the change of seasons, right? The change to fall, the change to spring. In the northern hemisphere, fall changes in September, or in the Gemara, October. And in the southern hemisphere, right, that becomes spring. And the opposite is true at the other side when it becomes spring. The autumnal equinox is, so you divide the 365 days into four, and you arrive at this moment in time where you have the transition in seasons. So you take this date, which the Gemara assumes that Tkufas Tishrei is. This doesn't relate to the lunar calendar at all. This is all in the solar system. So the autumnal equinox in the Gemara is, based on the Gemara's calculation, is on October 8th. You add 60 days to October 8th, and you arrive at December 5th or December 6th. Why? You arrive at most years December 5th. However, in every 4 years, the solar calendar corrects itself. The solar calendar corrects itself by adding a day, because as David said, there is an extra 6 hours. So every 4 years, we add a day, or else what would happen is the calendar would slowly, every 4 years, become one day off of the seasons. So in order to correct that from happening, we add a day. That's our leap day. That's our February 29th day. So it's December 5th normally, but in anticipation of the leap year, where you've already accumulated an extra 4 quarters of extra day, it's pushed off another day. We do it the Mariv before, so therefore for us it comes out to December 4th and December 5th. What's interesting is this calculation is actually 11 minutes off. This calculation is 11 minutes off. The whole, not the Gemara's calculation. Gemara's calculation, that's a separate issue. But even our solar calendar calculation is 11 minutes off. Every 128 years, it needs to be corrected by a day. Therefore, as part of the leap year system, which most of us are not aware of, and I'll explain why we're not aware of it in a moment, as part of the leap year system, every 400 years, every century that's divided by 400 with a remainder, even though it's supposed to be a leap year, it's not a leap year. Okay? We hop the day back. So for example, in 1800, it was divided by 400 at 4.5. And so therefore, that year was not a leap year, even though a century year should be a leap year. It's in terms of every 4 years. 1900, also 4.75. And therefore, even though 1900 should have been a leap year, it was not a leap year. I was sitting in Rav Yosef Weiss's, Zichrono Livracha, his Shir on Yoredeya for the millennium. So remember the millennium, it was very exciting. All the computers were going to break. Even Miami Boys Choir came out with a song that was extremely strange, right? About the terror of the millennium and all the things were going to happen. It was a Friday night, if you remember. So there was not much like we could do, and everyone just sort of waited to see what would happen with everything that was going on. So Rav Weiss, who is this old European, you know, Ravi, walks in and he tells us that he looks up from the thing and he says, you know, boys, there are halachic consequences to the millennium. So we're like, what? It's a Christian, like, counting. Like, what are you even talking? It's 2,000 years since, like, what is that? What halachic issues? And he told us it has an impact on the same Talumata Livracha. So we asked, why is that so? So he said to us the following, every 4 years is a leap year. So every 4 years, you're going to say the same Talumata Livracha, the night of the 5th, not the night of the 4th. The exception to that is on the centuries that are not divisible by 4, where there's no leap year, but the year 2000 is divisible by 4 evenly, so it's an exception to the exception, and therefore it is a leap year, even though it should not be a leap year, even though it's on a century, even though it's divisible by 4, it should not be a leap year, but since it's divisible by 4 without a remainder, therefore it is a leap year. So even though this should be the exception to the exception, It's not. It's the exception to the exception to the exception. And therefore, we're going to say the same Talamata Livracha on December 5th because we're going to treat it as a leap year, even though it shouldn't be a leap year because of the count of the millennial, and therefore it has halakhic consequences. So that's the story with the Tekufos. There is a general discussion about the fact that, of course, we know we don't celebrate the new season in October, right? We celebrate it in September. So there is a discussion. The Gemara uses a particular calculation for the autumnal equinox that's not used by general society. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, actually, in Orach Chaim, Chelek Dalid, I think Simon Yud Zayin, where he doesn't say who asked him the question. He says, Rav Echad asked him this question, why don't we switch it? And Rav Moshe basically says, you know, there are many different ways to calculate this. Who says that their calculation is the wrong one? And anyways, Rav Moshe goes on to say, this was never intended to be like a Kedushas Hayom. Not like something happens on this day. And if we're scientifically wrong, you know, we're off in terms of when we're asking for rain. It was picked as a day, as a day to say this is when the season is going to begin. So cool it. It's not the, you know, it's not the biggest deal. So therefore we have this. That's what Bavel does. So Bavel does it. Meshishim b'tkufa. What?
It will repeat Shimon
Esrei. Oh, so I'm glad Mori brought that up. So what's interesting is if you look at Simon Kuf Yud Zayin, but let's bring up one other point. And then we'll get to Mori's question. The Gemara then says, "Vagolad Shishim B'Tzkufa." We do it in the 60th day after the equinox. Amar Rav Huna Barchi Amar Shmuel Alocha Kechananya, and that's how we paskin. We do it after the equinox. Any is atruva boy me name Shmuel me emas from the kinyan of Saint Talumotar. When do we add the Saint Talumotar? Amr lehu michi ailut sivil leves tubos. When this bird catcher would bring in his wood, a different. So the Rishba Dilmas. The Gemara says, well, maybe idi v'idi chachiura. Maybe that's really one shear. Chachiurahu ibay lehu. We ask a question: Yom shishim kalifnei shishim or kala achar shishim? What about the day of the 60? Is that like before, so you wouldn't say it? Or is that like the day after, and you would say it? So Toshma, Rav Amar Yom Shishim Kala Achar Shishim. Rav says the 60th day is like the afterwards day, so you should say the same Talmud to Livracha. Ushmuel Amar Yom Shishim Kalifnei Shishim. It's like the period before, you should not say the same Talmud to Livracha. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, B'simanech, if you want a good simon to remember this, Eloi Bo Maya Tesai, the one who comes from Eretz Yisrael, who needs water more, adds the day. That's Rav, who spent part of his life in Eretz Yisrael. It's therefore, he says, you treat it like the day after, because you want to save a Saint Talu Matar an extra day. Right? Lobo ma, but bo mine tasai, lobo maya. But the one who comes, sorry, Eloi bo maya, tasai, but the one who comes from the lower area, from Bavel, lobo maya, does not need water the same way. So you don't say it. Amar Rapapa says Rapapa, Hilchas of Halacha is Yom Shishim Kala Achar Shishim. That's what we do. We treat the 60th day like afterwards, so we say the same Talamato Livracha. The question that then comes up in the Rishonim is the following. This is all true about Bavel. What about areas that are not Bavel, that have different climates than Bavel? If the whole reason we wait till the 60th day after the autumnal equinox is because that's what's appropriate for the climate of Bavel. Was this a gzeira for all of Chutz Laaretz, or was this something that actually would depend on the climate of where you were? So in the times of the Gaonim, they started to deal with this question. Rav Amram Gaon was of the opinion that it's not totally on Eretz and Chutz Laaretz. The Gemara never said Eretz Yisrael does it now and Chutz Laaretz does it somewhere else. The Gemara made a calculation based on a climate reality. And so therefore, Bizman Hazeh, if you're in a climate that needs rain at a different time, either you don't need rain yet, or you need rain later, or on the other end by Pesach, therefore, you should say it at a different time. And in fact, some of the Rishonim report that they changed when we say the same Talamata Livracha. The Rush was on a campaign. We have Chubas from the Rush about trying to get the community of Germany to change. The same Talamata Lebracha, right? That was before probably the cultural surprise of that, right? That Ashkenaz should change what they do. We paskin lahalacha, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch paskins, and Simon Kufyot Zion, Berchas Hashanim, we say, the same Talamata Lebracha, umachilin lishol matar bechutzlaretz, betfilas arvish yom shishim achar tkufas tishrei, and the Rambam says, ubeeretz Yisrael, we say it, says the Shulchan Aruch, mileil shiva v'mar cheshvan. And then he says, when we stop, and then the Gemara says, Vafilo, and even if, then the Shulchan Aruch says, and even if you're an individual who needs rain, you don't ask for it in Birchas Hashanim, you ask for it in Shomei HaTfilo. Let's say I need rain where I live in a period of time where we don't say the same Talamat to live Racha. So says the Shulchan Aruch, you don't tamper with the integrity of that bracha, but you may daven for the rain. Remember, when you don't say the same Talmud to the bracha, you don't daven that it should not rain. You say the same bracha. You should receive bracha. So in Shema Koleinu, says the Shulchan Aruch, you can add that I really want rain.
Does an American do that when he goes to Israel?
Va'afilu, that's a big discussion. Va'afilu ir gedola, that depends when they're coming back and when they're going. Va'afilu ir gedola k'ninve, or eretz achas kula k'mo Sfarad, even a big city like Ninve, or a whole country like Spain, bichlala, or Ashkenaz bichlala, ki yechidim damu b'shamei atfila. That's it. Everybody goes on December 5th, December 4th, and we don't allow different countries to switch different things. Everybody stays on the same program. However, umiyu in be'eretz achas kula atzrichim matar b'yimos achama ta b'yochid v'sho'al b'birchas hashanim chozer umispalo b'toris nedava below she'ela b'birchas hashanim. He says, however, there is one halachic difference. If you're in a place that does need rain and you add it, and you shouldn't have added it, whereas normally we say you have to repeat that Shemona Esrei no matter what, here the repetition of that Shemona Esrei is b'toris nedava, because it's not 100% clear that you may necessarily need that. So that's a whole discussion. It's a little bit outside of the time we have to talk about what happens when you travel from here to Eretz Yisrael, but there are many shittos in the poskim about what to do. Some of it has to do with when you're coming back, some of the solutions are to say it in Shomei HaTfila, because again, that's more of a generic. That's more of a generic.
Especially now we have a problem. Whoever travels from here to Eretz Yisrael lost the parsha on Shabbos.
Yeah, that's also a discussion. how you get back the parsha you lost on Shabbos. Sometimes you gain the parsha, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're now on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. We're on the Mishnah, the second Mishnah. Higia Yud Zayim B'mar Cheshvan. Now what happens? So we've been doing this, the same Talamot Tali Bracha. We really need rain. The Lo Yardu Gishamim, and rain has not come. Hischilu Ayechidim Misanim Gimel Tainos. So the Yechidim, who the Rashi says are the Rabbonim, the Tzadikim, they begin to fast three fasts. Ochlin v'shosin mishachashecha, they can eat and drink from when it gets dark. Umutarim b'melacha, they're allowed to do melacha, uvirechitza, and wash themselves, uvisicha, and anoint themselves, and ilas asandal, they can wear regular shoes. Uvitash mishamita, and they are permitted to live with their wives. Higia Rosh Chodesh Kislev, if Rosh Chodesh Kislev comes, v'lo yardu gishamim, and we mamish haven't seen rain. So now we're getting really nervous. So Beis Din goes in Shalosh Tainos Alat Tzibur. Now we ask the entire Tzibur to fast. Ochlin v'shosin shosin mishachashecha, but they're allowed to still eat and drink at night. V'matarim b'melacha, and they're allowed to do melacha. V'rechitza v'sicha v'nilas asanda v'tasha shamita. And they're mutter to involve themselves in work, in washing, in anointing, in wearing shoes, and in having relations. So the Gemara says, man yechidim. Oh, who are the yechidim? When I was, I probably shouldn't put this on the tape. When I was researching the mitzvah of Tcheles many years ago, I went to talk to Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, who's a tremendous posek of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's son-in-law. And I asked him, you know, what he thought about this. So he said to me, are you convinced by the arguments of those that say that you should wear Tcheles? So I said, I am a little convinced, but people say to me that the Gedolim don't wear tcheles. So he looked at me in the eye and he said to me in a very like guttural voice, he said, Miha Gedolim. Miha Gedolim. So, right? That's the Gemara's question. Who are the Gedolim? So Amar Rav Huna, Rabbanan. These are the rabbis. Amar Rav Huna, says Rav Huna, Yechidim Misanin Shalosh Taniyos. You should know that these great rabbis that fast the three fasts, they do it Sheni V'chamishi V'sheni. They do it on the Monday, Thursday, and then Monday. Ma'ikom Mashmalon, what did Rav Huna teach us? That's anything extra. That they do it on, we already know this, we do three. So Ma'ikom Mashmalon, Tanina, we learn, Ein Gozrin T'anis Al Tzibur B'tchila B'chamishi. You should know, and even though you're going to do Monday, Thursday, Monday, you don't start it on Thursday. Why don't you start it on Thursday? Because if you start it on Thursday, so everybody's going to show up to the market. People used to go to the market on Mondays and Thursdays. That's what we know. So people go show up in the market on Thursday, and all of a sudden, the shopkeepers see there's going to be a fast. So people are, they need food to prepare for meals after the fast. We all know that over the course of a normal day, a person needs 2,000 calories. Over the course of a fast day, a person needs 5,000 calories, right? Because when you're breaking the fast, it's, you know, you've been fasting all day. So you can go for it, right? So the storekeepers will see people, and people need food for Shabbos. They'll raise the price. They'll see raise in demand, raise in price. And they'll raise the price. So, Ella, if you started on Monday, so that's enough time for people to know. First of all, they're not also buying for Shabbos. That's enough time for people to know, no, there's a tainus going on, and therefore, you'll keep the market stable. Ella, shalosh tanios harishonos, sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. But rather, you should do the three fasts, Monday, Thursday, and then Monday. Ma'u detem ha'manathar animili b'tzibur. That's only true by the tzibur. Aval yachid lo kamash melon. But if an individual wants to accept a fast on themselves, you don't have to worry about this, and you could start on Thursday. So, that the Yachid also, when he wants to make a fast, even though he's not going to affect these in a significant way, the marketplace in significant ways, Monday, Thursday, Monday. Tanya Nami Yachid, we learned in a Braisa, Keshchitzchilu, Yechidim, Lisanos, and Yechidim begin to fast, Misanin, Sheni, V'chamishi, V'sheni. Umafsikin Barash Chadoshim, they stop on Rosh Chodesh, Ubi Yamim Tovim, and on any Yamim Tovim, Haksuvim in Megillas Tainis, that are recorded in Megillas Tainis. Megillas Tainis is a document that was around at the time of the Gemara that recorded a number of different holidays on which it is prohibited to fast. That's why it's called Megillas Tainis. And these are minor holidays that were around in the time of the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanon, says the Rabbanon, Al Yomer Adam, a person shouldn't say, Talmid Ani, I'm a Talmid, Talmid Ani, Eini Roi Lios Yachid. So maybe a person is modest, and they say to themselves, I'm a Talmid, I'm a student, I'm not a Yachid, I'm not Roi, I'm not of the stature to be one of those that fast for this purpose. No, you shouldn't have false modesty with this. Ela kol tamidei chachamim yechidim. Anybody who's even a talmid of a chacham, anybody any tamidei chachamim, they're all called yechidim. So ezehu yachid, what's the test? How do you know if you're a yachid? Ezehu talmid, what's called a talmid? So yachid, a rabbi that achieves the level of yachid, kol sheroi limnoso parnas al tzibur. That's somebody whose knowledge is broad enough and deep enough that he can lead the tzibur, meaning he can determine what the proper course of action is in halacha and in communal policy for a community. Talmud, what's the status of Talmud? Kol sheshalin oso dvar halacha bilimudo veomer. Anybody who can answer for information. You ask them anything they learned, and they know it. Even from the more minor works, like v'afilu b'meseches tekala. Even in Meseches Kala, which is a more obscure area of halacha. So the Talmud is somebody who basically knows what you need to know, and the Yachid is the individual who's able to take that knowledge and apply it to people's lives. So first of all, it's just interesting that the Gemara distinguishes between the two, right? Not every individual who has mastery over information and over data is necessarily qualified to be able to make that information relevant in a leadership context, right? The fifth Shulchan Aruch, the intuition that's required in the application of halacha to people's lives. People's lives cannot, halacha cannot be determined, as much as we live in a generation where we have more kitzur sfarim than ever imaginable. And if you know Hebrew, and now even if you don't know Hebrew, you probably could find out the answer to pretty much any halachic question, right? But that answer that you're searching for, whether you're searching in Google, whether you're searching in indexes, whether you're searching, you know, in various halakha svarim, that only gives you data and only gives you information. There's a context to the application of halakha. There are individual, you know, someone once asked me, why in the shul, why don't I put out a guide for avelus? It's very hard. Avelus, people, you know, are thrown into avelus and they don't know what to do, and it's very frustrating, and they don't know the answers to all their questions, and it's a difficult time, and it's emotional, they're emotionally distraught. And give them a piece of paper that gives them the guidance that they know what to do. And my response was, it's very simple. I tell different people different things. There is no guide on what to do. Because a lot of Hilchos Avelos has to do with the person and the context and the individual and the circumstance, what's going on in their life. It's not something you could just look up in an index and extract a halacha and observe it. A lot of halacha is like that. A lot of halacha is a corpus of expectations of Jewish law that just tells you what to do. But a lot of halacha has to do with the ability to contextualize and to understand the background of all these halachos. And the fact that just because something is paskened in the Mishnah Berurah doesn't mean that every single way in which that conclusion was arrived at is necessarily been marginalized entirely from the halachic system, even according to the Mishnah Berurah, that it can't be accessed in a situation of shas adchak. Not everything that's recorded as a bottom line halacha in an extenuating circumstance can't be handled. And so therefore, it's an importance. What did Rav Carmel tell us when he was here for the Oneg? He said something very beautiful. Some people in halacha look for solutions to problems, and some people in halacha look for problems for solutions, right? Some people take every solution and look for the problem, and some people take every problem and look for the solution. We're supposed to take problems and look for solutions. That doesn't mean we're supposed to always be mekel. Doesn't mean we're supposed to be mediocre in our commitment to shmiras ha-mitzvos. But it means that halacha is complex. Life is complex. And so therefore, there's a distinction here. One category are people who know a lot of information. Another category are individuals who have the ability to apply that information. Tanu Rabbanan, lo kol arotze lasos atzmo yochid ose. So then we have a price that says, you know, not everybody who wants to make themselves a yochid should. So let's say I'm living in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm looking around, and I'm seeing all the yechidim, the tzaddikim, they're fasting. So you say to myself, you know what? I also want to fast. I just want to be part of that group. Maybe I'm not a yochid. Maybe I'm not such a chashiva, you know, amazing person, amazing leader. But so what? I want to join their ranks. I want to push myself a little bit. So the Gemara says, you're not supposed to do that. But Talmud Oseh, but you can make yourself like a Talmud. Even if you don't know everything, you can put yourself as the status of Talmud. Divrei Rabbi Meir, that's the word of Rabbi Meir. We only want people fasting who are authentic to this standard. Rabbi Yossi says, Oseh v'zachar latov. No, you can do it, and you'll be remembered for good. Why? Lefisha ein shevach hulo, elet sar hulo. Because what are we worried about? We're worried that this is a certain level of arrogance to declare that you yourself are a yachid, are roi to be as part of this group. So that's a little arrogant. So to push yourself forward into a category that you're not really roi for, to do that for something that, you know, allows you access to respect and honor and you're more chashiv. So that is something we discourage. But when you do it in a way that's more difficult for yourself, right, then that shows that your passion is really sincere, right? A person wants to take on extra chumras because they want to push themselves a little bit in their avodas Hashem. So there's a very big difference between only taking on the extra chumras that everybody could see and that everybody points to you and says, oh, look at him, look at her, you know, with the tzitzis, with the this, with the that, and everybody sees that. And at the same time, taking on things that are challenging to your life, that are more difficult to do, that not everybody sees, that demonstrate and reveal the inner sense of authenticity in what you're trying to do. So the Gemara concludes that we encourage people to push themselves a little bit beyond, you know, where they are. That's the whole Aser Simei Tshuva. We take on the Chumras of Pas Yisrael and these kinds of things, even though we know this is not really the standard that we're going to keep afterwards. The growth sometimes comes by, what's the famous mashal, throwing the cap over the wall, right? Isn't that the Irish, no, nobody knows what I'm talking about? that you know, the guy's trying to get over the wall, he can't get over the wall, So he says, you throw your cap over the wall. You throw the cap over the wall, now you have no choice. Now you have to follow the cap. So if you want to get the cap back, you're going to have to find a way over this wall. So sometimes, you know, sometimes we push ourselves a little bit beyond where we would otherwise find ourselves. That's what I heard once, that's the concept of Keser Torah. We talk about the crown of Torah. Why a crown? A crown makes you higher than you really are. A crown gives you a stature that's beyond where you really are. It gives you something, that's what it means. It's aspiring. It gives you something to look up to. It gives you to push yourselves to. We sometimes, you know, kids will come back from Israel or people walk into shul and they'll want to take on something that's a little bit more. It appears that it's a little bit beyond their natural character. One of the worst things we could do is be cynical about that. One of the worst things we could do is you know, walk in and be like, oh, I see now you got a long Shmona Esrei. Now you got your tzitzis out. Now you got the black hat. Now you got the... That is a horrible, horrible thing to do. People who do that are I don't even know what to say about them. They're, you know, it's... This person is trying to push themselves. They're trying to throw the cap over. They're trying to work beyond. Of course it's not resonant with who they are. They're trying to push themselves a little bit. But in terms of addressing the religious health of that growth, so a person has to discern whether or not if the only things they're doing are things that people say, psh, that's the only things that are going on, that's not healthy growth. Healthy growth means there's some of that, but there's also they're being more machped on Lashon Hara, they're being more machped on brachos, they're being more machped on things that they're not necessarily we can see. So that's what the Gemara means. And the Gemara says, Zachar Latov, they're remembered for good. Because this is a horrible chumrah, right? Who would want to, you know, you don't come back shun a bet and tell your parents that, you know, now I decided to fast three times a day. You know, like, no, that's not a good chumrah. That's not fun, right? So the Gemara says, Tani Yidich, we learned in the Brisa. That's what the Brisa says. Not everything that a person wants to make themselves a yachid, they should do. Talmud Oseh. But to make themselves a Talmud, they should do. Divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, but Medvar Morim, where do we say that's true? B'davar shel Shavach. If it's just going to get people to say you're great. B'davar shel Tzar, but if it's something that requires a sacrifice, Oseh v'zachar latov, it's great. She'en Shavach hulo, el Tzar hulo. Because it's not a praise for you, it's a struggle for you. Tan Rabbanon, we learn, Misha Yimisane al Tzara. So somebody who takes upon themselves to fast for a Tzara, the Avra, and it passes. Their tefillos are answered. Or alachole, or they take upon themselves to fast for a chole, v'nisrape, and the chole is healed. Harizem misanu umashlim. So if you took upon yourselves Monday, Thursday, Monday, right, and in the middle it happens that you're answered, big storm. So he says, so you still mashlim the commitment, you still fulfill the commitment. Same thing with the healing. So haholech mimakom she'ein misanim mimakom she'misanim. What if you go from a place where they're not fasting to a place where they are fasting? How is a misana imohim? You should join them in their fast. Mimakom shemisan. This is also a discussion. This comes up a little bit, but not exactly, in the question of, I think we discussed this once before, if you move time zones on a fast day, right? Whether or not you go after where you land, whether or not you go after where you came from. Mimakum shemisanin, lamakum she'emisanin. If you go from a place where they're fasting to a place where they're not fasting, hariz emisane umashu. You should also finish the fast based on where you came from. Shachach ve'ochal, what if you landed in a place where they're not fasting? So you ate, v'shosan, you drank. I'm sorry, you landed in a place where they are fasting, but you weren't fasting before. So you made a mistake, and you ate and drank. So al yisroya b'fnei atzibur. So don't walk into mincha, where everybody's got that look on their face, you know, that like literally it's like the end of the world. And you're like, you know, all pumped and excited and happy. Hey, how's everybody doing? And it's clear you're like well-nourished and you're doing just great. Don't do that. The al yanig idunim ba'atzmo. And also don't, you know, okay, so you ate something. That doesn't mean you should then go and get a bagel and a donut and a, you know, and for those who are health conscious, and a very delicious kale salad, right? You shouldn't indulge, right? That's what we tell the kids all the time, right? Even if you're going to eat on the fast day, don't eat candy, don't indulge. All right, you're not fasting, but you don't have to indulge. It's a good bar. Shenemar, as it says, by Yomer Yaakov Libanov, Yaakov said to his children, Lama Tisro, So, you know, for what to be afraid? So what's going on here? Yaakov is sending the kids to go to Mitzrayim to get food because there was a famine everywhere, right? Yosef took care of the famine in Mitzrayim. So they have a lot of food there. So Yaakov sends the brothers without Binyamin to go get food. So the truth is they had food. So why do you send the brothers? So it wouldn't look like they have more than they do because that brings a lot of problems to the Jewish people. When their enemies see that they are well, that they are doing well. And we see this today, right? We have a country that's only 70 years old, and technologically, it's like hundreds of years beyond many of the countries that surround it. That evokes a lot of the jealousy and a lot of the hatred towards Israel, right? For some reason, we're handling that by showing off constantly about this. That, I guess, is to instill pride. But I think we could all agree that definitely only makes everyone hate us more, right? For those who hate us. Whether, you know, but I guess we'll leave that to APAC to decide. Amar Lahem, Yaakov Libanov. So Yaakov says to the children, Al tiro atzmechem, I'm sorry, don't appear, kishatem sveyin. Don't look like you're satisfied. Lo bifnei Esav, lo bifnei Yishmael. Not before the people of Esav, and not before the people of Yishmael. Interesting. Kadesh lo yiskanu b'chem, that they're not jealous of you. Al tirgizu b'derech. And now we're in the story where Yosef is sending the brothers back to Yaakov, and he tells them, Al tirgizu, don't have problems on the way. What does that mean? Amar Rabbi Elazar, says Rabbi Elazar, Amar lehem Yosef lo'achiv, Yosef says to the brothers, Al tisasku b'dvar halacha, don't talk in learning as you are moving on the way. Shema tirgizu aleichem aderech. Because if you do, you'll end up getting distracted and you'll have problems with where you're going. So the Gemara says, Inni, is that true? Va'amar Rabbi Eloi bar Berechia. Didn't Rabbi Eloi bar Berechia say, Shnei Tamidei Chacham Shmahachim Aderech, two Tamidei Chacham are going on the way, Ve'ein B'neihem Divrei Torah, and they don't discuss Divrei Torah, Re'uyin Lisarif. They are roi, they are appropriate to be burned. Shenemar, as it says, this is the Pasuk in Melachim Beis, where Elisha and Elio are walking, and Elio is about to be taken up to Shemayim on the chariot of fire, and the with the obvious music in the background, and Elisha says to Elio, you know, I want some of your powers, some of your nevuah, whatever it is. So what happens? They were walking together, v'diber, and they were talking, v'hine, and behold, rechav eish, v'susei eish, a chariot of fire and horses of fire, vayifredu ben shneyam, and it consumed up Elio to Shemayim and left Elisha. So time of the ikadibur, so the Gemara says, why is it that this fire did not destroy these people? That's only because they were talking, right? That's what the pasuk says. Holchim v'dib v'daber, right? They were walking and they spoke. So they were discussing halacha, halakha dibur, but if they weren't speaking, ru'uyin lisareif, they would have been burned. So what's going on? So here Rabbi Eloi says, Yudavka should be walking and talking and learning. And yet, Al tirgizu b'derech, we have this memra from Rabbi Elazar that says you should not be involved in learning while you're moving around. Lo kasha, that's not a difficulty. Hala migras, hala iyune. One's talking about just talking about general topics, right? Talking and learning a little bit. That you should do. That's a protective thing to do. But to be ma'ayan in something, that's already an iyun shir, that's already a problem. So you're jogging down Passaic Avenue at 11 o'clock at night. So what kind of shirim should you listen to on YU Torah, right? You should listen to shirim that are good, solid shirim that have general learning, general ideas. But to listen to mamish, like a very serious, lumdisha, difficult, challenging shir, so that you could trip, you could get distracted, you could not realize what's going on in your environment, you could get hurt. So maybe that's something that we should be careful about. The Masnisa Tana al tafsiu psia gasa. In Mishnah, we learned a person shouldn't have a psia gasa, a very arrogant, large stride. When you walk, you shouldn't walk with a large stride. The echnisu chama le'ir, and you should also enter into the city in the light. Al tafsiu psia gasa, de amar mar, how do you know that? You shouldn't walk with a stride, de amar mar, because the master said, psia gasa, will tell us, echas mechamesh meos mimor. A big stride compromises 1/500th of your sight. Mimor einav shel adam, your ability to see. I think there's a Mishnah Brura that says that you can get that back by staring at the candles, the Shabbos candles during Kiddush. There's some sort of idea there. You should go into the city in the light. Kid Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, like Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, Dom Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, La'olam Yatza Adam Bechitov. Person should always leave a city Bechitov, meaning at the part of the day of creation where God said Kitov, meaning a person should leave it when there's light outside, Be'ikanes Bechitov, meaning travel in the daytime when it's safer. Shenemar Aboker, or the morning light, V'hanashim Sholchu, and the people were sent. So that shows you that you should move around only when it's light. Okay, we'll stop here.